My ex-wife told me, clean up, pack up, and get out. Okay, good morning. My name is Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Peter.
And thank you for the weekend again. It's been pretty cool. I'm not a big fan of doing the gender weekends. Usually at these things, there's a lot of testosterone. I've done a bunch of them over the years, and I've walked into some of them, and it was, who's the baddest, who's the toughest, it's a lot of cliques. It's difficult to navigate through that. It's a getaway weekend away from the wife kind of thing, wives, and no one's really interested in the information. They just want to hang out. And, oh, yeah, and there's a meeting about the steps in the meantime. And so you can feel that kind of vibe when you're a part of that. So this has been quite refreshing for me. So I thank you for that. Pretty much everything I've been sharing, moved to share, is about where we're going to land in this morning. All of that heavy lifting is about getting to a place and living in what we like to talk about, the world of the spirit. Not driven by obsessions, compulsions, and emotions anymore. I mean, they're going to show up now and again, the emotion stuff. But a traveling light, almost transcending, can't transcend alcoholism, but transcend this worldly stuff that can really weigh us down. I flicked on the news last night. I lasted about 10 seconds. Nothing's good. You know, and if you get into that, it's like 5 minutes of that, and you're ready to go postal on people. So we get to get past all of that, living in the world of the spirit. And I have found what the 12 and 12 talks about is very true, that more dependence upon God gives me a more independent life. I travel light. There's space between me and my mind. Now, there's an author, Eckhart Tolle, in one of his talks, somewhere in Scotland, I think he was doing it, and he said something like, you don't need your mind, ever, which just sounds radical. It's almost like now the mind is trying to figure out, why don't you need me? You definitely need me. But he goes out that far and says, you don't need your mind, not if you're living in the world of the spirit, not if you're relying on intuitiveness, not if you're relying upon God. That's the best gauge we have, the best GPS we have. It's difficult, though, because I'm getting bombarded with thoughts all day long. From the time we wake up, time we go to sleep, it's a flow of thinking. And if I get caught up in that thought life, that becomes more important than anything. I'm paying close attention to the narratives. And that sets me up for how I'm going to feel and how I'm going to see and how I'm going to speak. And what begins to happen is, I heard this pastor talk about it, our aliveness is now deadened because of it, because I'm so bogged down with the narratives in the head. And what's interesting about most stuff that comes through the head is on Monday, it's, oh my God, I can't believe this, and I'm trying to figure my way out. And fast forward the following week, I don't remember what I was all bogged down about. It's like an afterthought. I was upset about that. It turned out to be nothing. And then the next one comes along, and I ride that one. And we get thousands of thoughts a day and wonder why we're not okay, but we're always exhausted. And so as I'm cleaning up the wreckage of my past, we get to do something that's pretty incredible. And I'm just going to fast forward through the 10 step for a moment and then maybe back up. And forgive me for being so bold here, but we read how it works at a lot of meetings. Where I'm in South Florida, usually opens up, and here's Joe to read how it works. I have to friend to read how it works. And you read how it works, and you read the whole thing. We hear it so often that many of us not even listening to it anymore. It's like when you walk into a meeting that the steps and traditions, you don't even see them because they're at every meeting. And so lots of times people are talking, getting up and coming in with their coffee or still texting on their phone or, you know, a little chatter in the background. And halfway through how it works, people are tuned into the meeting, but you're just waiting for a 10 because I want to hear the speaker. How it works is in the way. Having said that, I always think about a new guy or a lady who's sitting in there and just coming off a drunk and can't get to a detox or can't get to a treatment center, or maybe they just got out of one. But the drink is right here. And they're holding on to the chair for dear life. And this meeting, say, ends at 8 o'clock tonight, and they don't know what they're going to do from 9 o'clock till the next morning. I got a drink, I can't drink. I want to drink, I can't drink. I got a drink, and they're doing this thing. When is this going to end? When is this thing, bless you, when is this thing going to get off my back? When am I going to be like the old timers in the back who never talk about drinking? It's not a part of their life anymore. When is it going to happen to me? And we're reading how it works, which is important, how it works, and we kind of lay out what is ahead. But if I was the mayor of AA, I would, if we read this, especially to new people, at a beginner's meeting maybe, what the 10-step promises us. So I got this guy or this woman sitting there, and they're romancing the drink, but they know they got to get away from it. It's killing them. And when is this thing going to leave? When's it going to end? And we read this, and we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. So when I get sober, not only is the drink on me, but there's a lot of turmoil in the head. I got a lot of old resentments and anger towards people, and the future was I'm going to get them. And sometimes we can be in Alcoholics Anonymous, double-digit sobriety, and inwardly, usually it's more inwardly than outwardly, we're wrestling with people. I talked about that, I think, on Friday or yesterday morning, the tension we have towards people. I'm wrestling with people. I'm wrestling with political stuff. I'm wrestling with this activist group. I'm wrestling with the big bookers. I'm wrestling with the non-big bookers. All of it. There's a lot of tension going on. I'm fighting with them in my head. I got the scenarios. And in those scenarios, I'm always like, like Dirty Harry, I always win. I always have the right comeback. I throw the punch that flattens a guy. I never get beat up in those, you know. And I'm doing this, and then I walk into a meeting, and they ask me how I'm doing, and I tell you how wonderful and serene I am. You know? But it tells me, it promised me, I cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. And back in step two, we were coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And now we're in places he has. We're experiencing that promise. They delivered the package. This is what we signed up for. For by this time, sanity will have returned. And quite frankly, my experience has been this. They're talking about alcohol here, but depending on how deep I'm going to go, how immersed I am going to be in God, a lot of those other areas in my life where the insane thinking's coming back, again, about certain areas, whether it be money or sex or relationships, that puts me in a position of chastity, safe and protected as well. I'm not hurting myself or hurting anyone else, quite frankly. I'm right with God here. It's the world of the spirit. And the world of the spirit is not logical. It's like 1 + 1 = 2 here. It's in different operation. We're on a God plane. Okay. I will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame, and I react sanely and normally. And we find that this has happened automatically, which means this is part of the package. I don't have to think the drink through, play the tape to the end, keep it green, remember where I come from. I take a detox commitment because I want to be of service, not what I've heard some people say to keep it green. So I can see them suffering and I walk out with gratitude. That's pretty selfish, pretty icky. I will see that my new attitude toward liquor has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. It's part of living in a world of the spirit. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. I'm not fighting it. Neither am I avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I've not even sworn off. I haven't made a pledge. I haven't had to do any of that stuff. Instead, and here's the place called Recovered. The problem has been removed, and they go on to say after that, it does not exist for us. Now, that doesn't mean that my truth that I'm alcoholic, which I will be alcoholic till God takes me home, is removed also. But this thing that has plagued me, my mind takes me back to that which is killing me, is removed. I got a God shield between me and that. Now, that guy, that thing's gone dormant a day at a time. And God keeps it that way. So I'm sitting here perhaps with a new guy who's rocking and rolling, saying, here's what you're in for. Do you want to sign up? And for me, it always made more sense to do that first with the new guy before how it works. And that's just my flavor. You like chocolate, he likes strawberry. It's just my flavor. That when I'll sit with a new guy, he's like this, and he doesn't know, when am I going to get better? I'll read this to him. This is what you're in for. There's a lot of work in front of that, but this is where we're at. This is how Joe and Mary, the old-timers, are here 40 years, and they're not thinking about drinking. And they're packing into the stream of life. And they can go to parties where liquor is being served and be fine with it. But there's a hook. It says later on, this is how I react as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. What am I doing to keep in fit spiritual condition? We're bombarded with commercials about vanity. I don't know how the ladies do it. I tell my wife, I don't know how you guys do it, because it's constant maintenance, trying to keep up with folks. Bombarded with commercials about what car you drive, investing your money, getting the right body, getting the right clothes, getting the right jewelry. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And you have to look 25 in fit when you're 80 or you've blown it. And a lot of us make great efforts to do that, especially the youngins when they come in, when you're like 25 and 30, you're into that and you want to get to the gym, and I get all of that. And in South Florida, a lot of rehabs, they don't drink and go to the gym. That's what they do. And it's about looking good all the time and getting the tan and getting the fake teeth and getting, you know, the porcelain things. And now they're taking this drug that makes you lose weight. It's really for another thing. I forget what it's called. And I'm watching people just, they were 200 pounds overweight. They look like a model. What are they? And it's now they're taking this drug to help you lose weight. Everyone's lean. Point is, I can pay a ton of attention to that and almost no attention to the soul. I always had it backwards. Common sense becomes uncommon sense. My focus should be on the soul. I could do those other things. Go to the gym is great, taking care of a body. Wanting to dress nice and look good and take care of my teeth. Those are all important things, but they should not be first, and the soul is like fifth on the list. It should be soul first. And I have found that when I'm paying attention to the soul and I'm working out in the AA gym and I've got some really good soul muscles because I'm getting good soul food. It's another thing. We want to eat real good. You know, good, put good stuff in my body while I'm watching pornography and trying to be spiritual in an AA meeting. I'm starving my soul. So if I'm paying attention to my soul, really doing a good job with that, which comes down to a surrender to God's will every day, a lot of that stuff out there loses its impact. It loses its pull. The attachment kind of loosens its grip on me, and that's why I get to travel light. My wife has me doing CrossFit with her. I like to work out in the gym. I've always been pretty active. The older I get, I find I need to be more active, and I try to watch what I eat, and I pay attention to that. I have vanity. I like getting a haircut once a month. I like getting a manicure. I like being clean shaven. I like to get my clothes really clean. I'm a little OCD with that stuff. My closet has white shirts and blue shirts, and I do that. It's just me. That's cool. That's fine. But it doesn't come before prayer. Yeah? It doesn't come before meditation. It doesn't come before a meeting. It just doesn't. Because I'm in a place of this comes first, and this is the, without getting into it, this, for my belief, is eternal. I'll pass one day, but this will live on for eternity, and that's what I'm going to be walking with. What am I doing about it right now? Because I can say tomorrow, 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 and then tomorrow is today, and it's too late. I'm about to take my last breath and tell, I got to go through to work before I pass. Got to go through the steps again. You know, it's too late. I need to make amends. It's too late. Time's up. And that day could be in an hour from now. It could be a month from now. You know? What am I doing right now? I remember my sponsor called me up one time, and he said to me, it was like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and he used to call me Money. He's, Money, what's shaking? I don't know. It's 5:30 in the morning. I have nothing. And I realized later on, he was a 4 a.m. guy, and he would do an hour meditation. So he was calling me all lathered up. He was just in the thing, and he would call me up. And he asked me one morning, Mark had a loud voice, a kind of baritone-ish almost. And he would say, what are you doing about the dash? I don't know. What's a dash? You know, I give up. He's, what are you doing about the dash? What are you doing about the dash? And I says, Mark, I don't know. What's a dash? And he explained to me what he meant by that. Because I was brought up with all very rigid sponsors about the 10 and 11 work and writing out inventory and all of that. And he says, the dash. He says, if you go to a cemetery, there's a headstone. And on the headstone has a person's name. And then there's one date, the day God brought them here, and there's another date, the day God took them home, and right in the middle is a 2-inch dash. That was their life. What are you doing about the dash? And it made me think, you know, what am I getting caught up in and squandering hours that may have been worthwhile over nonsense because Joe didn't cover the topic at home group? Or there was no coffee, they forgot to buy coffee, and I had to go out to Starbucks. I had to go to Dunkin' Donuts and bring a coffee in because they didn't have my coffee. Well, my car is, you know, a few years old, and I would like a new car, and that's got me obsessed. I'm not a millionaire yet. Well, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not a billionaire yet because we know a million's not enough. Yeah. And we get caught up in that. And what about the dash? There's a great song. I think it was Carole King who sang it, and there's a line in there, and she says, these are the good old days. The great, powerful line, these are the good old days. It made me think one time about living in a dash. Right now, right here, I'll reminisce about this one day. And it could be, remember that time? Oh my God, it was so much fun, or I don't want to talk about it. But right now is really all I got. So this is how I react as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. Now, here's the hook. It's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels, my accomplishments of yesterday. I'm headed for trouble if I do. Here's the warning. For alcohol is a subtle foe. Now, I didn't know what subtle meant, and I didn't know what foe meant. And when I looked up in a dictionary, subtle is sly, clever, devious, and difficult to detect, and foe is my personal enemy. That's alcoholism. It's going to lay around and wait. It encouraged me to do unspiritual things, and one day it shows up, and I can't even see it coming. I'm headed for trouble if I do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve, a stay of execution, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, not to maintain, not to stay stagnant, but maintain caring of the soul. I maintain my car. I put new tires on it. I get the oil changed. I get it washed regularly. That kind of stuff, don't look at it, just don't even touch it, but there's my car. I'm going to maintain it. It's going to stay right there. No, that doesn't work that way. God hired me to get out there and do stuff. But while I'm doing it, I need to care for the soul. Soul food is my favorite word. What am I doing to get my soul food? Am I cultivating faithfulness? Am I cultivating this message? Am I hanging around folks who like to talk about God, who like to talk about recovery, like to talk about this book, who are members of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous, who love AA? I sometimes newcomers think I'm loony when I tell them I don't have a life. There's something in the scripture that says, if I try to find my life, I will lose it. If I lose it for his sake, I will find it. I don't have a life. My life belongs to God and to Alcoholics Anonymous, and because of that, I have a really full and abundant life. I'm right around 40 weekends this year doing this out. My wife is speaking about half of that, and a lot of them we're together. We work. We have a whole fellowship around us. I don't have the perfect life. I'm not on easy street financially or anything like that. But we have a really full and abundant life. We're members of our church. I mean, it's unbelievable. Sometimes in a house, Marion's got her girls calling her, and I got my guys calling me. It looks like a phone room, and we couldn't have it any other way. And in that, we have time for ourselves as well. And when I got here, I had nothing going on. I was trying to have stuff go on. I'm going to make my way. I'm going to scratch and claw to the top of the AA echelon and be like the CEO of AA one day or something. No. I gave everything to God. And a lot of claw marks were left in that, by the way. I'll be honest with you. You don't want this, God, right? You don't like this. You really want this too? I try to hold on a little bit. But the less of me, the more God. The more God, less of me. And when there's less of me, I'm doing all right. Not that I don't care about myself. Not that I don't have I'm apathetic about things or I bury my head in the sand. But what happens is my experience has been living in that light. We're more passionate, but we see things clearer. A lot more endurance, a lot more enthusiasm. And there's been times over 35 years I've walked to a meeting and been bored. I was at a meeting 2 weeks ago. It was a big book meeting, and it's two people were sharing. I knew they didn't know the book at all. They were reading, working with others, and I don't know what they were talking about. And the meeting had there was a lull in the whole. It was just a weird night at this meeting. It's usually a really good big book meeting. And I found myself bored. And I'm looking at the clock. The meeting ends at 8:30. Come on, 8:30. I want to go home. It was like that. And that little voice says, what are you doing? There's about 8 light chippers in this meeting, brand new people. This meeting is not for you tonight. This meeting is when it ends to go over there. You know what? Meeting ends. I always thank the speakers. Maybe they're having an off night. Maybe they were new in the book. Whatever it was just a strange night at this meeting, which is usually a lot of enthusiasm. And I went over to those guys. I didn't get to everyone. I went to a couple of them. We talked, exchanged numbers. I let them know I'm available for sponsorship, and I let them know where my home group is on Thursday night. You know, I walked out of that meeting like, all right. I was able to pack into the stream. Like, it wasn't about me. But I've been to meetings where I just find myself bored sometimes. I've been home walking in my house sometimes just feeling a little bored. Now, there was a time when that would happen. So, oh, my God, I'm not spiritual. I need to be doing something. No, there's sometimes life, the ebb and flow of life is like that. I just don't roll down that rabbit hole anymore. All right, I'm a little flat today. And my back is, I have not a good back. My back ain't so good today. I'm not going to let that affect me completely. I was sitting in a house one time with Mark Houston, and he had a bad back, super-duper athlete, chain smoker, and a bad back. None of it made sense. And he threw his back out, and he was in a lot of pain. I've thrown my back out. I know what that's like. And he said to me, Money, he says, my back is out, but I'm okay. This is not going to affect the rest of my day because my back is out. Life is way too short. So I'll deal with this. I'm just limited in getting around for the next few days. And that was a lesson I learned. Because if you're like me with an alcoholic, if I have a headache, you have to have one too, or have pity on me. And I will take all of you hostage. Pete's got a headache. You know. It's like that. Okay. So, just some prayers here. Every day is the day I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. I did it this morning. Father, show me how to carry your will into all I do today. I was going to be here this morning, and I did it before I got. Always, any conference I'm going to, there's a term for this. I pray for everyone attending that conference. Open mind, open hearts, that they get what they came for, they get there safe and get home safe. I've done that all the time. And while I'm at the conference in my morning prayer, I'll continue that prayer until I go home. I've done that since I'm here. But I'm headed to the airport. That could be Looney Tunes. And I don't get home till tomorrow. So I'm praying for anyone I come in contact with to bless them. And that I carry your spirit into the airport, into the boarding, and into the getting on the plane. And the guy who wants to fit his Volkswagen in the overhead compartment, I'm going to pray for him too. You know? Have you ever seen these people? I'm looking at it, it don't fit. And they're ramming it in, and they take your luggage and throw it on the floor and put theirs in. They sit down, everything's cool. Every day is a day I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I serve you, God? Your will, not mine, be done. And that's a constant. Here's what we used to do. Turn in, I still do it. Turn in order to go out. I turn in order to go out. I turn in order to go out. If I don't turn in, I will go without. Throughout the day. Conscious contact and constant contact with God. None of us do it perfect, but that's the how I'm operating, out of the soul, rather than operating out of self-will or self-reliance or fear, etc. So turning in order to go out, God, what do I do here? Okay, God, give me patience. God, show me what to say. Say nothing. Sometimes saying nothing is more powerful than a whole bunch of words. Show me how to be forgiving here. How can I best serve you? Your will, not mine, be done. And then it tells me this. These are thoughts which must, this is a command, which must go with me constantly, not when it's convenient. And then they talk about exercising my will along this line, all we wish. It's an interesting topic. God's will, our will, proper use of the will. What does all that mean? Proper use of the will. I'm aligned with God, and I'm going to do everything God asked me to do and throw all my strength into it for God's glory and to help somebody. So I'm doing a fifth step. Betty, I'm doing a 12-step call. And I got some, you know, a beat-up alcoholic who's not clean. It's kind of icky. Hasn't had a shower in a while, and he reeks of alcohol, and he's drunk. And I get the call. Hey, Pete, meet me. We got a corker. Let's go. And I show up. Proper use of will. I'm going to do everything I can. I've lied to drunks. They got dancing girls at the detox. Let's go. Come on, you know. The tennis court, yeah, they got a few. Let's go. I'll do, to get them off the ledge. I don't care. If somebody's on the ledge ready to jump, I don't care what I got to do to get them off. And if they break an arm in the process, that's fine. That'll heal. But you're not jumping. So I'll throw everything I have at that drunk to get them to safe haven, proper use of the will. If my wife has said, I will throw everything I have to help her get through that. Her sister's going through chemo right now, so my wife is kind of like, it's difficult for her. She's very close to her sister. And sometimes she gets off the phone and she breaks down and cries. My job is to be there, proper use of the will. Everything gets on hold right now. And I need to be there. Or sometimes after the meeting and I want to get home and there's a drunk who's in rough shape, I throw everything I can at that. My will is, can you handle this for me? I got an appointment. My will is, I'm going to look good when this is over. I'm going to tell everybody what I'm doing. My will is all about me. God's will is all about God and taking care of his kids. That's why he hired me. If I could be so bold, why he hired us. We got hired. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous, go to work for God. We're his hands and feet. It said earlier in the third step, we're agents for God. We're representing him. And what I do is I get the tool belt is now loaded in 10 and 11. I've accessed that power. I've tapped into this. There's a current running. My sponsor says, we're the pipe, though, not the well. But it's flowing. And I can take all of that wherever I go. I remember one time I was headed to Connecticut, and I had a talk to do in Connecticut, and it was a one-day event, and I was flying in that morning, hitting the podium that night, and flying home the next day. And I get to the airport, and something happened with the plane. They switched planes and people lost their flights. It was madness. And I realized I'm probably not going to make this meeting tonight. I was on a small window to get there. And people were going nuts, going up to the desk. I got to get to Connecticut. And they just, you know, usual stuff at airports. And this poor woman's behind, and she's trying to give different flights, and she's, you know, clicking away and looking up, and it was my turn. I said, "You okay?" And she kind of looked up. She says, "It's crazy today. They want to kill me. They're blaming me for the plane." But I said, "It's okay. Take your time." I says, I had a flight to Connecticut, and she says, "Let me see what I can do." She says, "Would a 12 o'clock flight be okay for you? It's about a 2.5 hour. I said, "Yeah, that's fine." She says, "I'll give you a $500 voucher for future plane use. Huh? Have a nice day." Boom. I could have been one of those knuckleheads, not carrying a vision of God's will into all my activities, and I got to get to Connecticut, damn it, and get me on a plane. I'm not worth doing. That's not her fault. I'd rather travel that way than another way, where I'm an AA angel and I get out of here and I don't look like that guy anymore. Proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If I've carefully followed directions, well, if I had a sponsor who's in this book, chances are I'd follow directions. Back to step one, that kind of desperation will continue. This work will drive me further into step one. Hopefully not away from step one. And if I have someone who's working with me as a sponsor who's a 10 and 11 person, chances are they're going to hold me accountable as to where's my inventory. We call them 10 steps. Some people don't. I'm just going to share what we did. We wrote out a 10 step, by the way. A lot of people don't, and I'm not here to flip anyone. But my first sponsor up until my last sponsor, every one of them would say, "Where's your 10 step?" Which meant I was writing about my resentments and fears that I was experiencing through the day. When we study our book, we'll see 10 and 11 kind of crisscross here and there. 10's about going around through the day, but 11 talks about when agitated or doubtful. And the reason why I'm agitated or doubtful is because I'm trying to get my hands on life again, and I'm getting frustrated, so I have to pause. But we wrote out inventory, and if you don't, that's your walk. And I would have times to call up and say, "Where's your inventory? Where are your 10 steps? Did you write a 10 step about that?" And there's some instructions what I was supposed to do. We also talk about in the 10 step, discuss it with someone immediately. If I have that resentment, I'm hooked. Who am I talking to? So what we were set up was the sponsor, and we had two immediately guys, or we would give spiritual consent to, "Hey, if I have an inventory, can I call you? Even though you don't sponsor me, but we're AA buds." And he would say, "Yeah, I'm going to read you the inventory." And I call up and say, "Hey, Joe, I got an inventory. I'm hooked. Can you hear this? Resentment cause and so on." And discuss it with someone. But the first thing we're supposed to do in step 10, it talks about, is God at once. The first move. Discuss it with someone immediately. Make amends if I've harmed anyone. Help other people, love and talents of others is our code. My wife and I have worked together for a long time. And she had this women's program, and I was running this men's program. And the gentleman we worked for was a real male chauvinist. He was just not a good guy, and just really bad towards women. And narcissist, textbook narcissist, by the way. And I walked into the office one day, and I was dating my wife at the time, and she was crying. I said, what's going on? She said, "I don't want to talk about it." I said, "What do you mean I don't want to talk about it? What's going on? What's happening?" She says, "You promise you won't get mad." You know when wives do that, "Promise you won't get mad." Then she tells you, "Go into the garage and look for the shotgun. You know, you're going after somebody." And she told me how our boss got really, really ugly with her. And in an instant, I was going to go Brooklyn. I actually turned into my dad. I could feel him, like, you know, rolling around in my head. And I was going to seek vengeance. And I says, I'm definitely getting fired. Within the next hour, I'm going to get fired, and I might wind up getting locked up over this, but I'm going in. I got to defend my honor and hers as well. So I got the whole scenario going on. And I says, wait here, I'll be right back. And she's crying even louder now. I says, wait here. And so now I think I'm a tough guy, you know, big shot. And I get into my car, and I'm going to his office. And God has a way of ruining everything. Because I got this little, you know that little voice? What are you doing? Yeah. And it kind of, and I start to now play out, what am I doing? And so what do? Call your sponsor. My sponsor was a gentleman out of Colorado at the time, Mickey Musset. And I was Mickey, and I'm talking 100 miles an hour. You got a minute for an inventory? He said, what's going on? And it's just rolling out, and a lot of F-bombs are coming out. And he says, slow down, let's pray. I took a breath. He prayed with me over the phone. He said, okay, let's do a 10-step. He says, tell me who you're resentful with. And I said, we'll call the guy Joe. Joe, why? And I told him exactly why. He says, where do you think he was selfish, dishonest, and frightened here? Because that's the 10-step ask us, those three pieces. I said, where am I selfish? Well, Mick, you know what he did? He says, where are you selfish, dishonest, and frightened? Let's talk about this. And he walked me through that. He says, I'm not saying what this guy did is right. He was probably wrong, dead wrong. But you going to attempt to beat him up, shouldn't you be in the office with Marion consoling her right now? Isn't that your place? And he says, Peter, you've been talking about resigning from this position, both of you, and start your own company for the longest time. Maybe God gave you a message. Maybe it's time. I says, God had to ruin it. I was ready to go like big, tough guy. I was in Tony Soprano mode. And I walked back in the office, and I sat with my wife. I made us a cup of coffee, and I consoled my wife. And she calmed down, and I realized it's time for us to resign. The company had gone sideways, and it was just getting ugly. And it was like it was a treatment center, but most of the staff was sicker than the clients. So it was time to go. And I sent in my resignation letter a couple of weeks later. And I walked out with grace and dignity. Now, what if I'm not in the world of the Spirit? And that invitation from God, like, what are you doing, would have gone right past me. Now, I don't know if I would have really drove all the way there and had some words. I'm not a violent guy anyway, but anything's possible. Why? We resigned, started our own company, helped a lot of people, started a nonprofit. A lot of people like nonprofits. They're helping us help other people in the world of the Spirit. I travel light. As I'm doing 10, so I would write out these 10. I still do. And at night, you know, the nightly review, I found keeping time with what's going on during the day, my nightly review stuff, those questions, the 11th step, there's not much to do as far as I screwed this up and I screwed that up. There's a lot less to do, but it is a review. And it brings me to step 11. One of the first practices, I've sponsored enough people to find that goes off the cliff, that's not even a practice anymore, is meditation. Especially, or even prayer at night. It's, thank you, God. And we don't have to get into a two-hour prayer thing at night. A lot of us work and we're tired. God gets that. Yeah, but I learned a long time ago, and I'm home on a couple of nights a week. My wife and I are home. It's been Tuesday nights. We've been home on Tuesday nights. I have a lot of sponsees calls. She has a girls' call, and that might turn into a Wednesday night. We kind of float around like that. But I'm home Tuesdays, and my last call ends at around 9:15 with my sponsees. So my night's done. My day's completed, basically. So I'll go in my little prayer room, and I'll do this 11th step. Because what I used to do is get into bed, watch a little TV, and now it's like 11:30, and I'm dozing off, and, oh, I got to go pray, meditate. It's not going to happen. So when I retire at night, it could be maybe 8, 9 o'clock. On Tuesday, it's around 9, 9:15, we'll say. It's like that. I'll get to the hotel later today, and I fly out tomorrow. So I'll be just hanging out. So I'll probably around 7 o'clock, I'll do this prayer. I'm exhausted. I'll probably sleep through the night. I'm not going to wait till 11 o'clock at night. You see what I'm saying? God doesn't make too hard terms to those who seek him. So I on awakening, this has changed. It has evolved a whole bunch for me over the years. At the beginning, the first time I went to meditate, I realized 2 minutes is far too long and too dedicated. This is a long time to sit meditation for 2 minutes. When I went quiet, and I had someone teach me with posture and breath for meditation, I realized I woke up to the amount of noise in my head that I'm walking with all the time when I try to go quiet. It's that air conditioner that's on that's really loud and you just talk over it, or the TV that's on when you're on the phone and it's really loud and you talk over it, and you say, hey, shut that off, and you go, whew, that was loud. There's motorcycles out here. When you guys fire those things up, it's going to get really loud, right? And we'll be watching, and they're really pretty to look at, and we'll talk a little louder. Then you guys will drive away, and they'll go, oh, my God, it's got awfully quiet. We don't have to shout. That's what I'm walking around my head when I first time I went into meditation. Wow, it was really loud in there, and a lot of distraction, so it's practice. And sometimes I still get distracted, and sometimes there's still noise in there. But overall, it's a different experience doing meditation, because I do meditation. It's part of working out. You know, I'll bust my butt in CrossFit where I'm gasping for air because I like the effect produced by it. I can't spend a few minutes working out on the soul. It's nonsense. There was a time I got into with prayer, meditation, reading, daily reflections, 24 hours a day, upper room, you know. Meditation, if you're from Brooklyn, it was a blank book. There was nothing in it. But I'm bummed. That was a joke. Okay. A little slow on the jokes this morning. And I read all this stuff. And then I got into burning sage. And then I got into the candles. And then I got into the meditation music. So I'm burning sage. I'm lighting candles. I get the Electric Light Orchestra doing a concert in front of me. And oh, the sage is not burning quick enough. The house is going to go on fire. Oh, the candles, I got new candles. The music, I don't like this song. Flick it to the next song. And I'm working the CD player. And I'm trying to go through the whole thing. And one day I realized, this is crazy. I'm an idol worshiper. Got to read all this stuff. Got to do all this. I stopped. That took a while. I still like to burn sage once in a while in my house. But what I created in my, and I got this from a sponsor in my house, is a place where I sit and meditate. And I have a what I call a little altar. It's about so high. I have a meditation mat. I'm a Catholic, so I got a lot of stuff like that on there. I have some special trinkets that AAs have given me over the years, little gifts, you know, a coin, a plaque, or something that was important to me, and it's all out there. I have something called rosary beads there, and a lot of neat stuff. And that's the place we go to pray and to meditate in the morning and in the evening and sometimes during the day. It's the safe place. And there's an energy, you can feel it when you have a place that you pray at regularly. And so what I do now in the morning is I open up with prayers, and I cannot command the Spirit to do anything, no matter how hard I pray. But what the prayers do for me is send to me to have listen to what God wants me to do. Having said that, most of my prayers are for other people. And I'm not a great guy. I'm not trying to give you that impression. I'm just an alcoholic trying to get better. But God kind of shifts things on me. I've been praying for my sister-in-law. I've been praying for the people who are working on her too, the doctors and the nurses and all of them, that they have a good day. My brother has Parkinson's. I've been praying for him repeatedly. and everyone who's tending to him. I have my younger brother has some mental health stuff. Two Thanksgivings ago, we thought we had to commit him. He came off all his medication on his own, and he crashed and burned. He's got severe bipolar. He fires wonderfully when he's on his meds, and they get them regularly. He's doing wonderful. But two Thanksgivings ago, it was frightening as heck. He was talking to himself. He was having delusions. And I got my other brothers, we got to take him somewhere right now. And I know a lot of AAs who are doctors and nurses, and I called them. I said, I need help. What do I do with my brother? So I pray for them. I pray for the suffering in the world. There's a lot of suffering in the world. There's a lot of suffering in our country right now. We're at odds over everything. There's hate. It's spiritual warfare, my humble opinion, what's going on the planet right now. It's, you know, if I can be so bold, get the right politician, that's going to help. Get the right city council, that's going to help. But it's not going to solve the problem. Not when it's spiritual warfare. We all know spiritual warfare. We've had our own demons battling with them. Drink, don't drink, and the other part always wins. But that's what's happening right now. What am I going to do about that? Carry the vision of God's will into my activities. Cultivate faithfulness. In my own little world, when the woman checks me out at the Publix grocery store, I say, have a nice day. And meet someone with a smile. I would love to tell you to do this all the time, because sometimes I miss that. Good morning and, you know, have a nice night. It doesn't take too much effort. Feeding homeless, that makes a little dent. Imagine if everyone did that. So my prayers are about suffering and healing and things like that. Religion is under attack out there, whatever religion you belong to. And I pray for those people as well. It's wrong. And so you got to call on the boss here, because a politician's not going to fix that. But God could and would if he saw it. God always wins. Always wins. And then I go into sacred silence. Sometimes I'll pray to God, hey, got a fifth step coming here. The difficult alky, just show me how to navigate with this guy. Because I'm really stuck on it. You know? Or maybe I'm traveling somewhere that I've never been to before. God, just keep me and Marion safe and protected. Things like that. Yeah? And then I go into sacred silence, and we go into darkness to see and silence to hear. It's called meditation. And it's really important. I had to be taught these things, what my posture and breath are like. Now, it's going to sound Eastern, and I'm not trying to upset anyone. I think when this started, it was more of a reflection than meditation. Dave can probably answer that better than I can. A lot of the way I've been brought up is with kind of an Eastern influence, sitting with posture and breath and going quiet and trying to touch that place. Now, lots of times we don't want to go all the way in there because we might hear something we don't want to. Like you might be going into meditation and it might be, you know, you haven't written inventory in about 2 months. When are you going to get a sponsor? I don't want to hear that. The other thing about meditation is we can have visions, we can have transforming experience. I've had a handful of them, which I'll share hopefully maybe one or two of them with you. But what happens is the mind gets involved in meditation too. It doesn't want me there. It's frustrated. The mind is frustrated with the silence. The mind is frustrated with me going quiet and seeking God. The mind doesn't like that. It's out of work. It has nothing to do. So it'll try to infiltrate, to pull me out, or say, well, hey, you had a vision last week. How come not today? So what it looks to do is invent stuff. If I don't go into meditation, don't have a vision, some sort of revelation, it's a waste of time. That's the mind working on me. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to meditation over and over and over again. It was just sacred silence, and I was done, I was out. There was nothing life-changing, nothing riveting happened. But the thing is, in doing, I succeed. I'm going to the gym to work out. It's not a great workout today. I wasn't really into it, but I worked out. The heart and lungs were working. The muscles were working better than sitting on the couch. In doing, I succeed. And sometimes meditation is just like that. How free do I want to be? I kind of dig meditation. Then it burst upon me one day who I was praying to, who we are praying to. I'm not, you know, we say prayers, okay, I'm doing prayer, okay, thank you, meditation, I'm out. And then one day it burst upon me, I have a line to the boss, and he's going to listen. And so does my neighbor, and so do my relatives, and so do people in my home group. There's great gods listening, begging to have a relationship with us, going to any lengths to have a relationship with us. And I have an 11 step that gets me right in. Because prior to the 11 step, it was about getting rid of me, all the stuff, gutting me out, if you will. So I'm a hollow bone, and I can hear. And I'm looking for it. I'm listening for it. Again, I would love to tell you I do this perfect 24/7, but I miss it a lot. Did you ever do something and get someplace saying, you know, something told me to call Joe? I don't know, and I missed it, and Joe passed away. Or there was a problem at the home group, and I was wanted to stay home, and something says you should go, and I stayed home. That afterthought, who's talking to you? Who is that? There's a woman, Carol LeMay, she says, sometimes we're looking for God. This big booming voice about this shifting of the planet that's going to come to you. Well, that might happen, but she says, sometimes God is like this. You're in the grocery store, and you're trying to watch what you're eating and trying to lose some weight, and in the frozen fruit section is the Haagen-Dazs, and God says, go to the fruit section. Sometimes it's that simple. When I was new, I started lighting candles. I mean, brand new. And I don't know, well, I do know now what pulled me to do that. It made no sense. A guy counting days walks into a church and lights candles. I was living in Minnesota at the time. And that carried with me. I'd walk into church once a week. I wasn't a church, a mass goer yet, but I was going to church. And I'd light two candles once a week, faithfully, religiously, one for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, and one for my mom. Make some prayers and out the door every single week. Then I got into the steps, and I got into prayer and meditation, and that kind of evolved, and I kept doing this. I was sitting on the edge of a bed in a drunken rage, a crying jag. And I remember some of it. I had the bottle in my hand, and I'm crying hysterical and cursing at God. My mom committed suicide when I was 14, and I woke up to terror with my dad on a 911 call. This was like her sixth or seventh time trying to commit suicide. She had mental health issues, narcotic user, alcoholic. It was messy. And my life changed that day. But in this drunken place, I remember screaming and cursing at God how he ripped me off. You didn't even give me a chance to say goodbye to my mom, full of self-pity, all of it. And I says, all I would ask you for, you SOB, was one hug from my mom. You never even let me have a hug with my mom. And I just went on and on and on. And I said something like, if you bring her down here, Mr. Big Shot from heaven, and let her hug me one time, I'll quit drinking. I'm trying to pull a deal off with God. Well, obviously that didn't happen. Then I get sober a few years later, and I'm lighting these candles for the sick and suffering in and out of the rooms, and one for my mom. Start a meditative life. And one day I go into meditation. I've shared this from a bunch of these podiums. It changed my life. Something that I walk with, knowing that I'm known by my Creator. I'm in this meditation, and I'm sitting on a beach, and God knows I love being, the mountains, the trees, they're beautiful. I like the beach. It's open. I can breathe. And I love I just like going down the beach and watching the waves. God shows off. It's beautiful, especially sunrise. I'm not a sunset guy. I'm a sunrise guy. And I'm sitting on the beach, and out on the horizon, walking towards me is the carpenter. And as he gets close to me, literally out of his chest appears my mom. And my sponsor told me that that's oneness with the Lord. And they get close to me, and I become this little eight-year-old boy. And bad things were happening to me at 8 years old besides my mom being sick. And my mom kneeled down on one knee and gives me a hug. Now, guys, when we're that age and you have a tough day and mama kind of hugs you and holds on to you, you're like Rocky Five at that point. You're gold. as safe and protected you can be when mama holds on to you. And that's what she did. She held on to me. And I stood up and I became an adult. And she held on to me as a young man. And I noticed she was weeping, but they were tears of joy. They weren't sorrowful tears. And the carpenter was next to her, and he put his arm on my shoulder. And we go eye to eye. No words are spoken through this whole meditation. And without saying a word, says, she's okay, she's with me. Because they talk to me about heaven, but I don't know what this heaven is. And he says, she's okay, she's with me. Blissful, euphoric, not good enough. I can't even describe what I was experiencing in this meditation. And then it changed again. Because what my mom did was, in this meditation, she pointed this way. And she pointed at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flickering lights. Looked like Manhattan's skyline lit up at night. And then she pointed this way at hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of flickering lights. She held on to me once more. And her and the carpenter walked away. They became one, and I came out of meditation. Till this day, I don't know how long I was in meditation, but I was very aware that I had been weeping. I kind of lost, there was no time and space in this, but I was actually there in the meditation. Meditation, part of our 11th step. And so I got up off the mat, and I went to the phone immediately, and I called my sponsor, and I described to him what happened, and he listened. He was an awake sponsor, been through the work. He had a life of meditation, an active 10-step, et cetera. And he told me about the oneness, and I'm telling what happened, and I says, but I don't understand all these lights. She's pointing at lights. What does that mean? And he got it. He says, you've been lighting candles for your mom for 9 years now. She let you know she got them. At that moment, I began to break because I crossed over into another place. It was a tremendous amount of freedom in that, oh my God, God knows my heart when it hurts. He knows what's happening here. That's been a riddle I cannot answer for the longest time. I made peace with all of that, and he delivered to me when the ground was fertile enough. At 8 years, I may have not been ready. 7 years, I may have not been ready, and so on. But 9 years, for some particular reason, on this particular morning, he said, now. So I go back to him. I've had a handful of those experiences, and a lot of our AAs talk about that, the little things. And we try to describe that or articulate that, but there aren't, the language is very limited. There's no adjectives to describe. I can describe God that I'm not describing God. We try to create a picture, tell a story. Like when we tell a story, we qualify at a meeting. It doesn't do the story justice, but we tell stories. And so that's what I do at my 11th step, and I get in at night, and I go into prayer and meditation. I work with lots of inspirational books, et cetera. And I'm just about out of time. Quickly with the 12th step, and I apologize for not having time on the 12th step, but working with others. There's something in our book here, and I marked it, and I hope I didn't lose it. Okay. The story of Bill and Bob, real quick. There's some really good bullet points here. Prior to his journey to Akron, the broker, Bill Wilson, had worked hard with many alcoholics on the theory that only one alcoholic could help another alcoholic. But he has succeeded in only keeping sober himself. The broker had gone to Akron on a business venture, which had collapsed, leaving him greatly in fear that he might start drinking again. Bill's standing in the Mayflower Hotel broke. I think he had $7 on him. Can't pay his hotel bill. Doesn't know what to do. He suddenly realized that in order to save himself, he must carry this message to another alcoholic. The alcoholic turned out to be the Akron physician, Dr. Bob. It says this physician, Dr. Bob, who had repeatedly tried spiritual means to resolve his alcohol dilemma but had failed. But when the broker gave him Dr. Silkworth's description of alcoholism, body, mind, and spirit stuff, And its hopelessness, the physician began to pursue the spiritual remedy for his malady with the willingness he had never been able to muster. Now I know what's wrong with me. I can't nurse a drink. I can't just regulate tonight with a few beers. Drinking causes more drinking, and I got this thing in the head that's compelling me to drink. Now I know what's wrong with me. Now the spiritual stuff makes sense. He sobered never to drink again up to the moment of his death. And here it is. This seemed to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It also indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. We do it at a day at a time, permanent recovery. What this book has done for me is allow me to walk us to get into what we call the world of the spirit, free of ourselves, to what? Go pass it on to someone else. Give the whole thing away. I've done 12-step calls, icky ones, throwing guys in the shower, never going alone, by the way, cleaning up a guy, hosing him down, getting him dressed, putting him in the car, get him to a detox, and he's out the next day. Back at it again. Over and over and over again, getting the liquor, throwing it out, getting rid of the dry goods, flushing that, doing all of that stuff. We've been able to do that. And never once they said, well, that's a lot of Coke left over. I wonder if I should take some. You know? Wow, there's still whiskey in the Jack bottle. Oh, boy, take a couple of pops before we go. I deserve that. I've earned it. Oh, I can't do that 12-step call. There's drugs and alcohol, and I can't go there. Nonsense. Nonsense. God, we got God's body armor on, and we're about to go to work for him. That's part of our work. Because quite frankly, if a drunk calls the police at 2 o'clock in the morning because he can't stop drinking, if they come, he's getting arrested. If you call your therapist at 2 o'clock in the morning, you're getting the voicemail. If you call a treatment center, the first question is, what's your insurance? If you call a drunk at 2 o'clock in the morning and you need help, here's what you're going to hear. I'm on my way and I'm coming with a few guys. The cavalry, that's what we do for fun and for free. That is more spiritual than quoting the book all day long. Because we quote the book, we tell a story about it, we talk about mechanics, but all of that is to get me in shape to go help God's kids, including family members who aren't alcoholics who are in a time of need. Or if good times come to me, I can spread that wealth around. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. I work for God. I get to practice these principles in all my affairs when others around me are not. That's the real test. It can be spiritual in an AA meeting. What about when I'm around my in-laws or people at work who are civilians and you go to the coffee pot and nothing but gossip and slandering going on? Or you're in the middle of the liberals and the conservatives over a coffee pot. Whatever side I take, I'm going to be wrong here. How do I navigate? So I chop wood and carry water, and I've been serving as much as I can to AA and God. Some people are just gifted with sponsorship. They're just good at it. They just will sit there for hours and hours and word line by line through the book, and others are good at service, and we all have our hat to wear, but I gotta pass it on. I must sponsor. I've always had a sponsor. My first 6 months I was using guys, talking to guys, and I almost got drunk that way. And since then I've always had a sponsor, a go-to guy. And God has put some giants in my life, for me anyway. And I'll close with this last reading, and we'll get out of here. This book was given to me. It's not an AA book. If you're like me, I'm an alcoholic. I read the pictures first, and I read the ending, then I start the book. It was sitting on my nightstand forever, and I opened it up one day, and I'm flicking through, and it had the italicized writing. I said, I wonder what that is. And I read it. I pulled it out because it describes what we do here. And this is what the author writes. May I become at all times, both now and forever, a protector for those without protection, a guide for those who have lost their way, a ship for those with oceans to cross, a bridge for those with rivers to cross, a sanctuary for those in danger, a lamp for those without light, a place of refuge for those who lack shelter, and a servant to all in need. My name is Peter. I'm an alcoholic. That's all I got.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777. Or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.